You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Arkansas football loses again. We'll talk about it today on the show. And basketball season's finally started. We'll have Anthony Christensen on from Memphis as the Razorbacks get ready to play another exhibition game tonight. First, a word from Kendall King.
4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
I thought Arkansas had a chance to win Saturday. I think that, you know, you go back to Hugh Freeze's comment last year. Remember, he said, if you play that game 9 more times, we beat them 9 times. I think if you play that game Saturday more times, Arkansas wins some of them. They played a good game to an extent. Let's put it this way. They put themselves in a position to win that game. You're up by double digits in the second half, and, you know, you've got everything there in front of you at home. And it's unfortunate for Arkansas that the best game they have this year defensively, and that's a low bar, and I understand that. And I don't think the defense played as well as some people do on Saturday, because Auburn scored a lot of its possessions. But it was the defense gave themselves a chance to win the game by holding Auburn to all those field goals. And then you go out and you have probably the worst or the second worst, Notre Dame game being the other one, game that you've had all season. All those turnovers in the fourth quarter. Again, it's a very winnable game. There aren't a lot of winnable games that you have on the schedule. I would say Mississippi State may be a winnable game this weekend, but you know, you lose that chance against Auburn. And I think that, you know, when you go back at the end of the season, and if Arkansas hasn't won an SEC game, that's going to be the game Saturday where you go back and you say, man, if you could have just done it a little bit differently, it would have been this way. But, you know, you don't get any do-overs. This isn't the World Series. There's not a best of 7 going on here. And you got to live with that result.
Yeah, this was just a meltdown. I didn't feel like Notre Dame was a meltdown. It was a bad offensive performance.
It was a beatdown.
They had nothing to offer, especially in the second half. But this was just everything that could go wrong went wrong in the fourth quarter. And it was just like, it got to the point where it was like comically bad. And so I don't think that we'd seen them really do that yet this year, at least not to that degree. I didn't feel like there hasn't been any points, you know, even though they've given up leads before, that I felt like this is just, it's just the wheels have fallen off so fast.
I was listening to Cole Kublik last Friday previewing this game on a podcast, and he, you know, he's an Auburn guy, and so he's got a radio show there in Birmingham, and so he pays attention to Auburn probably as much as he pays attention to anybody. But he was talking about, he thought Arkansas would win this game. He said he didn't think that it set up well for Auburn. And he thought that Talen Green was going to be the X factor in the game. And he used a phrase, and he said, he's a takeover player. He's a takeover player. And when he said that, I had this thought. I said, he's also a turnover player. And so I had that wordplay in my mind going into Saturday's game, takeover and turnover. And you really go back and you look at Arkansas's success or losses the last 2 years, and it kind of comes down to, did Talen play a turnover-free game, and did he take over that game, or were there turnovers involved? This year is no different. I mean, Tennessee, how different does that game potentially go if he doesn't have the 2 fumbles? And of course, Saturday with the 3 interceptions in the fourth quarter. We just see this with him. Every time that it feels like he's taken a step and he's not that player that we were hesitant that he would be going into the season, there's like this it reverts back to an old habit. There was another instance on Saturday where it's 3rd down and he takes a sack and it probably knocks him out of field goal range. Then you get the 3 interceptions in the fourth quarter. Of course, there was a fumble too by Omega Blake. But I think he's got a lot of potential as a quarterback. But man, he makes some plays at just untimely times in a game that really are killers. And and I think that's what I go back to with the turnovers. Yes, there are a lot of turnovers. He's committed 10 now this year in 8 games. Last year, I think it was 14 in 13 games. But it's like the timeliness of them. It's the pick six on Saturday. It's the pick six at Oklahoma State. It's the strip sack against Ole Miss. It's the fumble against Texas A&M last year. And you just go on and on and on. There are so many instances of this where a tail end turnover is the play that you look back and say, hey, if that doesn't happen, this game may go a different way. And that pick six in the fourth quarter, it felt like that just sucked all the air out of the football team.
And even besides the turnovers, I mean, he was not running the ball the way that they need him to. And that was something that Bobby Petrino talked about after the game. He talked about it again today. We just came over from his press conference and he talked about it again. And, you know, during the game, I was thinking maybe it's the knee from the A&M game. You know, he left with the knee injury, came back with the sleeve on. He didn't have the sleeve on in this game, I don't think. And, you know, and Petrino said it wasn't that, that he was not, they were not intentionally trying to run him less out of caution. He did say today that he felt like Talen's preparation going into the game wasn't up to par. And he felt like some of that was he had the injury on his mind just in the week leading up to the game. And so it was interesting how he felt like, you know, he thought it was a little bit in how he prepared, which I thought was notable. But so even in the run game, you know, turnovers aside, which you can't really set the turnovers aside, no. But even before that, before the fourth quarter meltdown, it's still, he was not playing quite up to par. His passing stats were pretty good. You know, his completion rate was pretty good. But they need him to be able to run the way that we've seen him run throughout the season. And he just couldn't.
You just can't turn it over like that.
No.
Three interceptions. I went back and looked up some stuff this summer. Like, what does a good team look like in terms of a quarterback taking care of the football? In 2011, when Arkansas finished number five, they won 11 games. You know how many interceptions Tyler Wilson threw in 13 games that year? He didn't lose a fumble. Six interceptions in 13 games. Talen threw half of that in the fourth quarter against Auburn.
That's insane.
And so, like you just cannot have your quarterback being turnover prone like that. And I think that's what's – I'm not saying that's what's kept them back. Their defense is really bad this year. But, you know, again, the defense gave him a chance the other day, and it was just a big, big opportunity wasted.
They just,
I feel like,
they can't put a complete game together. No. And on the turnover point, I pointed this out in my story yesterday. On Sundays, I usually do. I go through Pro Football Focus grades, and then I also just kind of pull some other stats and stuff and just kind of look at some, like, okay, day after debrief, let's see, you know, numbers-wise what we learned. And last year, Arkansas finished the year tied for the ninth worst turnover margin in the country at -8. They are at -8 in the turnover margin right now.
Through eight games. Yeah.
And last year, the turnovers were the biggest conversation. You know,
and the expectation is that it's probably going to get worse as the season goes along.
Yeah.
You know, they would have to turn it around in a big way defensively. And then the pick six on Saturday that Arkansas had, that was their first turnover they forced since Memphis. Is that right? So over a month it had been since they forced a turnover.
Yeah. And that's the big difference between last year and this year, is they're just not forcing them the same way. And that's been a problem. And that's why Kenai Walker's pick six was such a big deal, because they finally had the breakthrough. Mm-hmm. And after that, we were talking, we kind of felt like, okay,
that's,
you know,
the play.
It was so early, but we were like, Auburn's not going to be able to, you know, come back from that. Just with all of Auburn's struggles, defense was playing pretty well. That felt like a game-changing play. And then, psych, there were several other game-changing plays.
I had a whole game story written about the defensive interception, and, you know, that was what they needed, and they'd won. And
I told Anthony to write a Kenai Walker sidebar after he had the scary injury and stuff, and whatever. And then it was like, actually,
when I retire, I want to see if I can go back in all my different computers and stuff that I've used, and just published all the game stories that never got
that never were.
Like the alternative Razorback history.
Yeah.
Like, I've got a game story somewhere on this computer that they won the national championship in 2018 in baseball, and I never got to publish that thing.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, because you're down to, okay, there's one out left to go.
Yep.
You got to have this out.
You
got to
be ready. Yeah.
And,
that's
everything
so funny.
Derails.
You call it What Could Have Been.
What Could Have Been. That sounds like a good book that would be about the Razorbacks. Defensively, you know, they were put in a lot of bad situations on Saturday. I looked this up. Auburn's starting or average starting field position after halftime was the Arkansas 49-yard line. There is a kickoff return that goes to the 49. There's a blocked punt where Auburn starts at Arkansas's 43. And then there's all these turnovers that end up putting them in Arkansas territory. There was one punt where Auburn started a drive at its own 18-yard line. You take that away, and there was not a drive that started further away from the end zone than the Auburn 44, I believe. And so they just had this outstanding field position right, you know, right there between the 40s, it felt like, every time they got their ball or they got the ball. And so I feel like for Arkansas to hold them to the points that they held them to was actually,
yeah,
it was a good performance. The defense was put into a lot of bad situations. But again, nine possessions, Auburn does score on seven of those nine. And, you know, honestly, they had a chance to make it 8 of 9 had it not been for the pick six at the Arkansas 15 when they throw that interception. So it was a good bend but don't break game for the defense. And now I guess the question is, are they able to replicate that? Maybe the good news for Arkansas moving forward is that Mississippi State, not the best offense.
They're pretty I was looking at the stats today. They're pretty much middle of – they're between 7 and 9 in the SEC in, like, every stat category. Honestly, some of them on defense too, but all of the offensive ones, they're, like, 7 to 9. They're just right in the middle.
Missouri, Bo Perbula, looks like he's out for the year. So you wonder about what that's going to look like at the end of the season. I think they're down to their third-string quarterback because Sam Horn got hurt in the season opener. Texas, you know what they've been like offensively this year.
LSU,
in addition to firing Brian Kelly, which we want to get to here in just a minute, they fired their offensive coordinator this morning. So these are not the same offenses as they're going to see over the last 4 or 5 weeks that they saw the previous 4 or 5 weeks. But again, I don't know how many times Arkansas can replicate that kind of performance defensively.
Yeah, I don't either. And I want to talk about Bobby Petrino because
I do too.
There's a lot of discussion about, okay, it feels like people, and I mean like fans, people like, you know, just people that are talking about it more pretty casually. It feels like it's like, okay, well, that kills his candidacy. And I hesitate to do that. Mm-hmm. I hesitate to just go, all right, well, show's over. It's not going to be Bobby. I just don't think we can do that yet. I do think, you know, last week, a week ago, we sat here and I let myself be a prisoner of the moment and be like, hey, maybe Bobby's their best bet. Maybe this is going to work. Maybe they're just going to do it and it works because the vibes were so high at that one time during the Texas A&M game. I don't know why I let myself do that. That was stupid. I am back to, I don't necessarily think it would be a guaranteed fail, but I'm back to feeling like, you don't have to do that. And honestly, I don't think it's necessary. I think it's hard. I think from a football perspective, it is not your best play. I know there is a lot of context around it with like what we talked about last week with the way this coach carousel is shaping up, what Arkansas is going to be able to do, the financial situation, all of that stuff. You can't divorce it from that context. But I do think from an on-field perspective, what has Bobby Petrino done that's that different from what they fired Pittman for doing?
Well, like I said,
there's been better effort. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
What is it going to look like next year? You know.
Yeah. Well, like I said last week, I don't think you hold the one score losses over his head like you did Pittman's because he didn't recruit the entire team.
Right.
I felt like the last few weeks felt like an audition for him, and especially Saturday. And I would not go so far as to say that he's not a candidate anymore. But I do think that
it's
what
an uphill
happened,
battle now.
Well, I think what happened Saturday is that's going to be one of those where, again, you're looking back at the end of the season and you don't have enough wins. Maybe he's looking back at the end of the season, like, what if that would have went different? Maybe, it felt like that popped the balloon a little bit.
That was your
deflated,
shot at your first win.
Maybe not popped the balloon. It deflated it.
Yeah.
I agree. It's like the fourth day after the birthday party. Now it's still over there in the corner, but it's not as good looking as it was on Saturday. I don't think he's out of it as a candidate.
I think it would be naive to say that show's over.
Because he still has people here who believe in him. And I don't know that, you know, one game doesn't change what has been said previously, which is that he has put together an offense for this team that is a really good, you know, really effective offense when they're not turning the ball over. Turnovers, obviously, a huge problem. What would the team look like this year if they had any semblance of a defense? I don't know. Now, Saturday.
They had one.
Here's the thing.
And then the offense fell apart.
I think that there's something to this. When you ask your – I watch the Cowboys every week. You know,
how fun.
Because I don't have enough, you know.
Pain and misery.
That's right. So I decided to put myself through that on Saturday too. You know, like yesterday was a very similar game for them playing the Broncos. They've had this great offense all year. Their defense is the worst in the NFL, and it's not even close. You can't ask your offense to be on every single, like 100% of the time. And I feel like that was kind of what happened on Saturday. They got a good, you know, decent defensive performance, but your offense is going to have days where it's not performing well. Your defense, if you have a great defense, look what happened to OU. They've got maybe the best defense in the country. Ole Miss comes in on Saturday. They score 32 points against them. You know,
and their special teams were bad too.
Special teams were very bad.
That was a problem.
Yeah,
they've had lack of discipline on special teams.
Two of Auburn's field goals were a direct, not a direct result, but had a like a special teams mistake had a big impact on them kicking the field goals. The 49-yard kick return to start the third quarter, and then that blocked punt in the third quarter. Both of those ended up with field goals, and you wonder, you know, how do those drives go different? If they have to go to the length of the field as opposed to 30 yards and they're in field goal range. So I don't think Petrino is totally out of it.
No.
What happens when you fire a coach in season like Arkansas has done is that it's just too long for everybody. And I'm talking about everybody, the fans more than anybody. But the anybody who's paying attention to it, it creates like too long of a runway to choose a coach. Because you've got 8, 9, 10 weeks there now to analyze every single person. You know, Rhett Lashley, a week ago, people were like, yeah, he might be. Then he loses to Wake Forest.
Yep.
You can't hire a coach that loses to Wake Forest. Yeah. You can't do it. You know, every coach is going to have warts by the end of this because everybody's been watching all their games and thinking for 8, 9 weeks, well, how would they look here if they did this? And, it's. I think coaches should be elected, though. That's like we need to have an election.
I started laughing, and then I was like, can you imagine who – what crazy person would people
Well, if you
pick?
Look at this like politics, you know, like you could have maybe just your internal pool of state candidates. You know, like your lieutenant governor is the head coach at Arkansas State, and your attorney general is down here at UCA, and your secretary of state's over here at UAPB. And then you just
Meaning
rise the ladder.
Meaning most people on the ballot just don't check anybody on that one.
Like, so, you know, you like – it could be. Yeah. Running out of post. But like, you rise the ladder and now, hey, if you want an Arkansas State, now you get to come over here if enough people.
Are you saying you want Arkansas coach Butch Jones?
No. No. I said if he wins at Arkansas State. That didn't happen. No, it's a little tongue-in-cheek there. But it people get so upset because you finally get to the end, to the finish line, and this guy that you have, you know, thought about everything and you know you've got it all set up in your mind. This is how it would work if Coach A was hired. Well, he went with Coach D. Why did he do that? Doesn't he know what I know?
Yeah.
And you know, all these people think that they like they should have a say and a voice in the process, but in reality it's a very small number of people who actually get to choose.
Yeah. And sometimes they choose wrong.
A lot of times they choose wrong.
A lot.
As is a that's reflected. That's a great segue, Christina. we didn't plan on this. Now that LSU is open, 12% of the Power Four jobs are open, and it's not even Halloween. There are 68 Power Four jobs in college football, and 8 of them are open after LSU fired Brian Kelly. Again, I've said this every Monday that we've been in here for it feels like a month and a half now. Sunday has become who is next?
Yeah,
who's getting fired today? And it took a little bit longer yesterday, but there was kind of that, you know, kind of under the surface talking all day that, hey, something may be going on down in Baton Rouge.
Conversations are being held.
Yes. High-level conversations. You know, you never – low-level conversations,
it
may be the
have.
Coordinator. It may be the coordinator that goes. High-level conversations, it's the head coach.
Yeah.
And Brian Kelly ends up going. Brandon Marcello had a good point in one of his shows yesterday. He said, quote, "The expectation is we're going to have more jobs open than qualified candidates to take over as head coaches this year." Again, 8 jobs are already open. It's not even Halloween yet. You know that there is going to be job hopping whenever the opportunity comes here in about a month or so. And so how many jobs are open and how does it affect Arkansas? Now, on one hand, you could say that LSU's pool of candidates and Arkansas's pool of candidates, they're not swimming in the same swimming pool.
No.
But I do feel like with these jobs, like we saw in the whole basketball domino effect that eventually led to John Calipari coming here, there's kind of this downstream deal that can happen where it can affect you, maybe not in who you hire, but in who you don't have an opportunity to hire. Yeah, I just feel like some of these puzzle pieces, they have to fit together a little bit more potentially at the top before Arkansas can find its candidate unless, and here's the big caveat, unless Arkansas goes after someone who is not currently coaching and you can go get that person and you can have them locked up before the carousel really starts spinning at the end of the year.
But why are they not currently coaching?
Well, I mean, there could be any number of reasons why they're not, but
I feel like typically that's not a great recipe.
Longer you wait, the more Arkansas's job looks less appealing in the national sense. Now, all you got to do, I mean, this is like getting married. You know, you find the right person.
That's topical.
Yeah. You know, do we want to say anything?
Sure.
Okay. Show everybody your finger. Yeah. All right. Christina got engaged yesterday.
Yesterday.
Yeah. We're excited for her.
Thank you.
I was not invited to the party. I will just admit.
You'll be invited to the wedding. You'll be invited to the most important party.
All right. I told you I've not been to a wedding in 7 years.
Yeah.
I like to avoid those things.
I was going to say, he was like the plague. I remember we were in the baseball press box once last spring, and you were on a thing about how much you hate weddings. And then like 2 innings later, we had fully moved on. We had talked about many other things since then. 2 innings later, you were like, by the way, if you have a wedding and you wanted to invite me, I would come to your wedding.
I would consider it, I think is what I told you.
I was like, I would consider it. I'm glad that I would be the one wedding you would deign to come to.
Scotty Bordelon's wedding was the last one I went to.
Wow.
Yeah. Long time ago. It feels like a long time ago.
But anyway.
But it's all about fit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's all about, and it's kind of like whenever an NFL team drafts somebody. Okay. Hey, 31 other teams may not like you. That one team likes you and they give you a chance. Hey, great. I mean, think about all the great football players who everybody passed on at some point in time. You know, Tom Brady is the one that everybody wants to talk about. 6th round pick of the Patriots. Well, everybody had a chance to draft Tom Brady before the Patriots finally did it. And so, you know, that word fit is really kind of one of the buzzwords that's being thrown around right now. Mm-hmm. Brian Kelly wasn't a fit at LSU.
But if he had won the way they thought he was going to win, nobody would have cared.
He won at a fairly decent rate. I mean,
but at the level they thought he was going to win. I know what you're saying. You know, so that's the thing. I think a bad fit can make you reach the level of toxicity that you got to with Brian Kelly. But I think winning cures everything. And if he had won at the level that he was expected to, when he was expected to do it, then I don't think anyone would care that he kind of is not a fun person and has like a fake accent. I don't think people would have cared that much, you know?
Yeah. Fit goes both ways. You know, and like we were talking about where Arkansas fits in the conversation of what makes an attractive job. You know, like Arkansas may be an attractive job to somebody out there right now. Like there may be good coaches that are out there right now who they've always thought, hey, maybe they grew up here. Maybe they went to school here. Maybe they were like Sam Pittman and they grew up near it and had kind of an operational feeling for it. You know, there's somebody out there right now who – this would be a very ideal job for them. It's all about, are you able to go out there and identify them by the time that you've got to make a
coaching hire? And
then
when they get here, can you give them enough to work with? Yeah. And can you know, is the want to be here enough? It depends on the person and it depends on what kind of support you give them. But do you need more than just, yeah, I'm excited to be here? Because in Sam Pittman, you had a guy who was so excited to be here. And that got him a certain amount of goodwill. But that runs out when you don't win.
Yeah.
And you know, like we've talked about a million times, Hunter Yerchek said he didn't have what he needed to succeed. So how are you going to set up the next person?
The world totally changed on Sam Pittman's watch. The
100%.
COVID, the house settlement, NIL, everything. I mean, I've said this before on here. What he was hired here to do and the way that you put a football team together in the fall, winter of 2019 – and how you did it by the time he was like 3 or 4 years into the job, totally different.
But I think things are still changing at Arkansas specifically. I mean, not on that level, not on the like complete upheaval of the way college football works. But I think in terms on a micro level of how Arkansas is working, they are trying to change a lot about how they do this and how they the kinds of resources they put into football, how they're going to do, you know, handle roster management. They're trying to make all these changes. And so, you know, in an effort to kind of get somebody better positioned to succeed. So it's difficult because you want someone who wants to be here because you need that. And I think for Arkansas, people here especially, that matters a lot. And I don't think there's nothing to that. But at the same time, I don't think a desire to be here is enough. There's a lot more that you need.
I just think about all the teams that Arkansas is competing against. Mm-hmm. Like, look what LSU just did. Brian Kelly won 71% of his games. He had a Heisman winner 2 years ago, 2 10-win seasons, a 9-win season, he won 66% of his SEC games, so 2 out of every 3 SEC games, and he still gets sent packing after 3.5 years. Now, I understand why it happened. I watched the game against A&M just like everybody else did the other night, and it was a terrible look for him on the sideline, you know, cussing out anybody after every bad play, and there were plenty of those for LSU. You look at Penn State, what they did with James Franklin. He won 70% of his games, 64% of his Big Ten games, had a Big Ten title, 5 top 10 finishes. They were in the national semifinals last year. Penn State and LSU were both in the top 10 of the AP rankings this month. This month. They were both top 10 teams. Now, should they have been top 10 teams? No, they shouldn't have, but they were. And it's just amazing to me to see how fast those coaches fell out of favor there. And I understand there were some things that, you know, were happening behind the scenes and leading up. It's never just one game that cost you your job or two games or whatever. But these are the teams that Arkansas is having to compete against. And you think about Arkansas, they probably kept Sam Pittman around for 2 years too long. I thought he was going to get fired in 2023. I've said that a number of times here. Like, I had the story ready in the story that I wrote in 2025, whenever he was fired after the Notre Dame game, had a lot of stuff that I had written in 2023. I was that confident at that time that they were going to make a coaching change.
Yeah.
And so they leave him around for what a lot of people think was a couple of years too long. And here you've got real proactiveness from LSU and Penn State. And you know there's 15 other teams out there. Texas, apparently Steve Sarkisian, there's rumors that he may be on the hot seat, even though that he's taken him to the national semifinals 2 years in a row, had him in 2 conference championship games the last 2 years. I don't know that I buy that. But now, you know, I mean, when you've got LSU paying $53 million potentially for Brian Kelly to go away, and that has to be mitigated, and James Franklin's getting paid $49 million, and that needs to be mitigated to go away from Penn State, the fact that they're even willing to put themselves out there for that much money and take the negative press that they're probably going to take in some instances for cutting a coach who's had some success at their place. And then here you are on the other side in your Arkansas, and you may have held on to your last head coach for 2 years too long. That's a really striking difference. And I don't know, it shows me kind of the steep hill. We can talk about finances and everything else, but just that mindset is a steep hill for Arkansas to overcome.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways that, and I think the Penn State and LSU moves, while they weren't entirely unexpected, I do think those are kind of widely seen as pretty, you know, emotional, hasty kind of decisions that were made maybe too soon.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see. I mean, it all will depend on what those schools are able to get after this and what their next coaches are able to achieve and whether it works out, basically. You know, it's like a decision to go for it in a game. You know, it looks great if it works. It looks really dumb if it doesn't. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. There are so many different ways that different schools handle these things. And it is, like you said, it's very indicative of where Arkansas is versus where some of these other teams are. And it's not just Arkansas. There's other schools.
There's
that
a
are
lot
in
of schools
situations.
That are in the similar. Yeah. But boy, when you're, it's like you're swimming in the sea with a bunch of sharks in the mm-hmm. SEC. And I don't know that they've got the shark mentality.
Yeah.
That it takes to survive in that pool.
I don't know that they do either.
All right, Christina, appreciate you being here. When Anthony Christensen's on here in a few minutes, we'll talk Arkansas basketball. They beat Cincinnati the other night at Bud Walton, and they're going to play Memphis tonight over at FedEx Forum. First, another word from Kendall King.
4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. I want to tell you, too, that we're going to have Arkansas's assistant baseball coaches, Matt Hobbs, Nate Thompson, and Bobby Warnes at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. That's going to be Thursday of this week at noon at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can still reserve your seat at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com for Matt Hobbs, Nate Thompson, and Bobby Warnes at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club on Thursday. That'll be our podcast on Thursday, too, that roundtable conversation we have with the Razorback baseball coaches. We're joined now by Anthony Christensen. Anthony is going to be in Memphis tonight as the Razorbacks take on Memphis in an exhibition game at FedEx Forum. It's going to be an 8 o'clock tip-off over there in Memphis. First time that John Calipari has been back in Memphis since he left, or first time that he's had a game at Memphis, I should say, since he left for Kentucky following the 2008-2009 season. This game's going to be televised tonight on ESPNU. Of course, the Razorbacks played Cincinnati the other night at Bud Walton Arena, won 89-61. And as we bring Anthony in now, Anthony, you know, I watched the entire game Friday night, and I knew Arkansas was highly ranked, ranked number 14 in the preseason. But I gotta tell you what, the athleticism that I saw from them against the Cincinnati team that had played really well against Michigan the week before, that really stood out. It was a 28-point game, but it felt like the distance between those two teams, at least on that night, was a lot further.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, you know, you mentioned the athleticism. I thought that was definitely on display. And in the backcourt, especially, Darius Acuff had a really nice game. I was really impressed with Malik Thomas as well. You know, there were some bright moments from just about everybody who played for Arkansas that night. And obviously you don't want to read too much into exhibitions just because that can get you into some trouble down the line. But it was a promising performance. And I think the biggest thing that you look for in these exhibitions beyond, you know, results, because those are always going to be secondary when the wins and losses don't count towards your actual record. But I think the biggest thing that you want to look for is individual performances. And I thought there were a lot of, you know, standout showings in that game. I mean, like I said, Darius Acuff and Lee Thomas, I thought both looked really good. Trevin Brazil had a nice night. Carter Knox, I thought, looked really good in his moments as well. And then there were others too. I thought Billy Richmond looked really nice getting to the rim. I'd like to see him, you know, kind of show off a little bit of that jump shot that, you know, that he and the coaching staff has talked about in the off season. But, you know, maybe we'll get a little bit of that tonight since he's playing at, you know, in his hometown. But yeah, there was a lot of good individual performances. I thought there were some good, especially on the defensive end, there were some good sequences as well. You know, so like I said, you know, reading too much into exhibitions can get you into trouble. But when you're looking into, you know, individual performances, particularly from freshmen and guys who are new to a program, new to a team, I think there's a lot to like there for Arkansas for sure.
I think it's a good sign that whenever you get defensive buy-in in an exhibition game, but especially when you get defensive buy-in from the freshmen like they had in this game. You mentioned Thomas and Acuff. I thought Isaiah Seely had some really good defensive moments too. I mean, there was a defensive buy-in from this team in an exhibition game when you don't always see that. And then, you know, again, for it to happen from freshmen.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, that was – defense was kind of the team's biggest, you know, strength last season. I think they finished 18th, I want to say, in adjusted defensive efficiency at KenPom. So, for me, it was a big question to see, you know, if they could meet or even better that mark kind of going into this season. And the early signs, like I said earlier, you know, you don't want to read too much into an exhibition, but, you know, they were very good defensively. I mean, there was a sequence of 5 turnovers and I think 5 minutes and 45 seconds from Cincinnati. And, you know, yeah, some of that is going to be down to Cincinnati playing a bad game, but also I thought a lot of it was down to, you know, Arkansas's defense being really good. I thought the on-ball pressure was really good. You know, there were some moments of full court press that you know, Cincinnati struggled with. And, you know, I think Arkansas's length and size caused them problems as well. Obviously, Arkansas has a lot of good, you know, size and position. You know, Darius Acuff's got some size, Malik Thomas, and obviously the front court guys are, you know, all big and long and all that. So you have all of those tools, and then the defense as well. I mean, there was a lot of effort plays too. I mean, I don't remember if it was Acuff or Thomas and Carter not running for something in the second half that led to a basket on the other end. But there was a lot of good buy-in. There was a lot of, you know, plus moments on the defensive end. And, you know, like I said, you know, exhibitions can be mirages, they can be illusions, but there was a lot to like from, you know, from the guys on that end of the floor for sure. And I'm intrigued to see how they do, you know, tonight against a Memphis team that's, you know, you expect them to be physical, you know, you expect them to play hard, expect them to play tough nose, just because that's kind of, you know, what Memphis has been under Penny Hardaway. But, I'm intrigued to see how they look tonight against, I think, a more physical team. But yeah, there's certainly a lot to like from that first exhibition for sure.
Talking about mirages, the number of dunks that Arkansas had the other night. I mean, is this team going to be that high flying?
We'll see. I think Trevin Brazil got asked about that, and he said the exact same thing. Said, we'll see. Obviously, it's an exhibition, and sometimes those don't always pan out, and you're not going to see the exact same team. But I'll tell you, it was fun to watch. the first basket Arkansas scored in the night was an alley oop from Darius Acuff to Trevin Brazil, and I think that's a combination you could see a lot throughout the season. I think Billy Richmond had a few dunks as well, and things of that nature. But I think the biggest thing when you're talking about dunks and all that, I think, is the athleticism. I think they added a lot of athleticism, particularly in the front court. I don't think Zvonimir Visic was necessarily the world's greatest athlete. Not that he was a bad player by any means, but he's not a guy you're going to see, flying around the way you do with Trevin Brazil or Malik Ewan or Nick Pringle. I think he had more of that with Jonas Adu, but he's not, he wasn't as fast or as mobile as Malik Ewan or Nick Pringle. So I think that's kind of where a lot of that comes from. And I know the front court didn't, put up a ton of points in that game against Cincinnati, but, I think that's where some of that kind of comes from. And I'm intrigued to see how it goes, but I'm not sure that I'll predict that they have 300 dunks a night or whatever it was they had against Cincinnati. And maybe some of that also was Cincinnati kind of being ready to be done with the game once it had gotten out of hand, because it's it's an exhibition. It doesn't count when you're losing by 30 on the road. It's kind of like, can we get out of here? Maybe. But no, there was plenty to like on that front as well.
How much do you think Calipari is looking forward to this game tonight? He said he's going to have a ton of his former Memphis players in attendance.
Yeah, I think he's excited. I asked him about it after the Cincinnati game on Friday, and he went on a pretty long tangent just talking about different things, be it the guys he's going to have there, the guys who are going to send in videos because they can't be there, or the friends he's going to see, the friends that he and Ellen, his wife, are going to see, and just being back in a city that he loves. So I think it's going to be exciting. I know he posted a photo of the shoes he's going to wear, which they look pretty cool. The names of all of his former players on there, with the Memphis logo on them as well. I'm not sure you can get away with that during a regular season game, but it is what it is. But it's fun, right? That's what a lot of these exhibitions are for. It's also going to go to a good cause with St. Jude's and everything. So, there's a lot, outside of just the basketball aspects of it that are going to be fun. Obviously, it's going to be two teams that are expected to be good going into the season playing. But then for him personally, I think, there's a lot to look forward to. When he first left, there was it was a little bit dicey, maybe a little bit, not necessarily the cleanest breakup, but time has passed, and I think a lot of people in Memphis are excited that he's gonna be there. All of his former team players are gonna be there, and there's a lot to like, from that era of Memphis men's basketball. So I think, I think he's excited, and I think a lot of people around the city of Memphis are excited too. So I think it's gonna be a fun event.
You're getting a call. You might want to ignore that. You've got talking about all the former Memphis players, and just the connection. And this has kind of become one of his calling cards here in the last few years. Is now that he's been coaching for so long, you've got generations of families that he's had a connection with, and you got two players on this Arkansas roster in DJ Wagner and Billy Richmond, whose dads played for him at Memphis. That adds kind of an interesting layer to this game too.
Yeah, no, and we talked to Billy a little bit before the Cincinnati game, and he seemed excited to get to play in Memphis. He's from Memphis, so there is some excitement from him there. We didn't get to talk to DJ, unfortunately, but Billy's excited. I'm sure DJ is excited to play in the arena that their dads played in, and there's it'll be fun. I think the last time Memphis played in Bud Walton, I want to say, Billy Richmond's dad was the leading scorer in that game. Shout out Matt Byrne for providing that stat. But, yeah, I think that's correct. But, yeah, there's a lot of excitement there. You know, it's a cool aspect of things. I think I'd heard Gary Parrish talk a little bit about how he used to cover Memphis, and he's known, you know, Billy Richmond since he was an infant, and now there he is playing college basketball, which is pretty cool. And I guess it kind of speaks to, you know, John Calipari's staying power in college basketball, the fact that he's, you know, had, you know, success for as long as he's had and is now coaching his, you know, his kids' kids, I guess is the best way to put it. So, yeah, there'll be a lot of fun for those guys, I'm sure.
Hey, before we get you out of here, you cover soccer for us too. The Razorback soccer team won the SEC yesterday with a 3-1 win over Oklahoma. That's 5 SEC championships now for them in the last 7 seasons. I feel like this one, when you think about, they don't have the star player on this team, and they've had a lot of injuries with this team, and they lost a lot of players from last year's team. I feel like if you were to get Colby Hale one-on-one, and after the season, he might tell you that this was his most gratifying SEC championship run. I just wonder what you think about what they've been able to accomplish to this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, anytime you win a championship, it's going to be a big deal, right? But, I mean, you look at, you know, kind of the circumstances surrounding this one. I mean, they've had 5 players who, you know, are out with season-ending injuries. You know, they don't have – I mean, they lost over 50% of their goals to graduation transfers last season. They've only had, if I'm not mistaken, 1 player get an SEC Weekly Award this season. And that was Vailana Tuua, who won Freshman of the Week one week. And I may be forgetting someone, but that's the only one that comes to mind. So, you know, it's been a true team effort. I mean, you look at, you know, Keegan Smith, who was the starting goalkeeper coming into the year. You know, she goes down, you know, with some injuries here and there. And now Evelyn Vitale has to step in, and she's been, you know, spectacular in goal for Arkansas in a role that, you know, she was recruited to be the second choice goalkeeper. And she's kind of been, you know, thrust into the first choice spotlight, and she, you know, hasn't skipped a beat, and she's been, you know, really good for Arkansas in that role. And there's so many others, you know, you can point to. I mean, Arkansas lost all of its holding midfielders to season-ending injuries, and you've had to throw in, you know, Naya Nurse-White, who was recruited to be an attacker, into a defensive midfield role, and, you know, a lot of different situations like that. And they've obviously come out the other end with the title, which is very impressive. And yeah, there's a lot to like about it. Obviously, they, you know, there's been some moments where, you know, they haven't been as consistent as, you know, Colby Hale would have liked, and he'll, you know, he's talked about that. I mean, the draw at Missouri is a, you know, one that was, you know, talked about a little bit yesterday. The loss at Georgia, 2 games that they would have liked to have had back. But I mean, in the end, to, you know, put all of that together with, you know, a very new look, fresh team, and to, you know, overcome a lot of the things they overcame and to win a title is, you know, it's very impressive. Is it the most gratifying one? I'm not sure. I didn't ask him that, but he did say it was very gratifying. So it was an impressive thing to watch and to cover, just because, I mean, it was a different player who stepped up from time to time. I mean, you look at, you know, like I mentioned, Evelyn Vitale stepping into the goalkeeper role, or, you know, different forwards stepping up at different moments, or different midfielders or defenders or whoever it may be. You know, there were a lot of different players who stepped up. It's a true, and you're going to get that in soccer anyway, but, you know, with this one in particular, you know, it's a true team title. So that I think is the most impressive part about it, is the fact that it's just, you know, every single player on that roster has, you know, had a part to play in it. And yeah, that's I guess my general overview on that. I probably rambled a little bit, but yeah.
It was big enough to get John Harvey to take his shirt off and run around the field like Eric Musselman. So big win for Arkansas yesterday. Anthony, good stuff. We'll see you tonight in Memphis.
Absolutely. See you, sir.
All right. You can read all of Anthony's content at WholeHogSports.com from the exhibition game tonight. We'll also talk with him tomorrow after the game, again, Arkansas-Memphis, at 8 o'clock tonight at FedEx Forum. That game is going to be televised by ESPNU. Hope to see you tomorrow on our show or at our website, WholeHogSports.com. Appreciate you being with us. Have a great day, everybody.